Chapter 11. Hamarth's rugged islands clung close to one another in the vast, choppy ocean that covered much of its surface. Despite the modern spaceports carved into the basalt cliffs and the array of sturdy small craft that flew and floated among the islands daily, the Pamarthans maintained many of the old bridges of wood, stone, and rope, restoring them as needed without ever replacing them. They said this was to make sure their people still had courage. Privately, Greer thought they just wanted to scare offworlders. Anyway, it worked on Joff Seastriker.
"This goes on for another kilometer?"
Joff said, both hands gripping the rope railings on either side. His gaze darted down to the swirling water far below.
"What sadist built this bridge in the first place?"
"A true Pamarthan."
Greer used her grandparents' thick accent, letting the burr of it settle in around the R's. She drew her woolen drape over her head and tucked it in more securely around her neck amid the swaddle of robes and wraps her people wore on her homeworld.
"Which is what you're pretending to be, remember? If you show up at the cantina pale and queasy, you'll blow our cover in a heartbeat."
Joff gulped.
"I don't think I can help the queasy part."
"Then just keep moving. Get a flush in your cheeks."
The kid's skin was nearly as pale as Princess Leia's, which would mark his family as relative newcomers to her world, but that could be generations back. And the island they were walking to lay at the far northern tip of the archipelago, where most such newcomers had settled.
"Besides, the faster you get to the next terminal, the sooner you can take a break."
"Okay. Okay."
Joff took a deep breath, eased his grip on the ropes, and started moving forward. Although the bridge swayed beneath his feet, he resolutely kept going. The same heavy woolens that Greer wore so easily made him look half as broad as he was tall.
"Why didn't we just land on this island instead of the other one?"
"We restrict landings here. To keep out the invaders, who haven't shown up in about 300 years.
Greer shook her head. Sometimes she thought the local clans were still hoping for villains to come running over the next hill, spoiling for an old-fashioned sword fight.
"I guess it works," Joff said. "Nobody would ever invade this place if they knew it meant crossing these bridges all the time."
"You fly a starfighter. How can you be afraid of heights?"
"When I'm in a starfighter, I'm in control. Piloting a ship I maintain myself, so I know it's as good as anything else that flies. Here? It looks like nobody's repaired one of these bridges in years. The ropes could give way any second."
His face paled as they swayed in the wind again. Amused despite herself, Greer said,
"I thought you wanted excitement, Sea Striker."
"I do. But my idea of excitement doesn't involve throwing up. At least, not until the day after."
Greer shook her head.
"Hang in there."
To her, the rope bridge's sway felt almost comforting, like being a ship on the sea. Like most Pamarthans, Greer had had to learn how to handle watercraft before anyone would teach her how to fly.
"If you cannot conquer the sea, you will never conquer the air."
That was what they all said. Some of the happiest moments of her young life had been spent on a boat, winching a sail into place, or looking for a good cove in which to anchor. At that moment, facing the wind and the sea spray, she felt good. Really good. Maybe she'd been too cautious lately. Greer turned forward again, gazing toward their destination. The island, half shrouded in fog, jutted up from the ocean as if defying the waves. When she saw the soft glow of lights from the coastline buildings, the sense of homecoming that swept over her was too powerful to deny. Just a couple hours' flight away, friends of her grandparents would be cooking enormous kettles of fish stew and coming together. If she were there, they would welcome her in a moment, smiles wide and arms wider.
"You're not here for happy reunions,"
she reminded herself.
and this only works if nobody recognizes you.
Fortunately, pilots were known more by ship than by face. When they walked down the steps into the old cantina, nobody who looked at Greer showed even a flicker of recognition, though Joff's pale blonde hair drew a couple of glances. They slid into an empty space at the end of one of the benches for the long tables, which was when the tavern keeper came over.
"Haven't seen you two about before."
"Been gone a while," Joff said.
His tone sounded casual enough to Greer, but the tavern keeper must not have liked what he heard. From his apron, he pulled a flask of something reddish amber that made the nearby patrons start to laugh. Port in a storm. Greer would have known it at 20 paces. The tavern keeper set a squat glass in front of Joff.
"If you've been gone too long, you're not a real Pamarthan any longer. Gone soft, like an off-worlder?"
Joff tried.
"No, I... no."
"Best prove you've still got your chubies, then."
The tavern keeper poured a full glass of port in a storm, then scooted it in front of them.
"Let me see you take that down."
"He's just a kid. Leave this to me."
Greer reached past Joff to take the glass, tilted it back, and drank deep. The fire seemed to zoom to the top of her head and the core of her gut simultaneously, but she knew how to take it. 3 gulps, and she was done. Greer smiled at the tavern keeper, turned the glass upside down, and banged it on the table.
"How's that for chubies?"
"And that's a woman of Pamarth!"
the tavern keeper yelled as cheers filled the room. Just like that, they were accepted. After a few congratulations and handshakes, the hubbub faded, and Greer and Joff were only 2 among dozens of hardened pilots and fighters, waiting for their next tankard of ale. The chatter flowed freely, unchecked by suspicion.
"Too many patrols around Kessel these days. Might as well put a net over the whole planet and be done with it." "Mark my words. The whole Imperial fleet is out there, just biding their time. Mark my words, we've not seen the last of them."
"And then he says, I don't care if you like my friends. And I say, well, you share all your opinions about my friends. And he says, could you believe the Sullust team took the orbitals?"
Greer barely glanced over as she interjected,
"Word on the ground has it Sullust's the one to beat this year."
"Sullust? Get on with ye. They'll be sent home crying by the Coruscant team."
"And our team? You'll count the Pamarthans out already?"
"After the way they fell apart at the orbitals, they've no chance any longer. Flew like a pack of off-worlders."
So the conversation went, swirling and eddying all around them. Greer spoke up often enough for it to seem natural, no more, and otherwise kept listening intently without appearing to listen at all. She'd learned how to do this with senators. She could manage it with pilots, who had worse language than the politicians, but better manners. Joff got too involved in a conversation about pie, a subject apparently very close to his heart, but that was harmless and distracting to those around them. Greer took it all in without reacting, until the moment a few hours in, when she heard the exact kind of thing they'd been listening for.
"Not enough pilots who understand discretion these days."
"Discretion?" she repeated, turning to the pilot who'd been speaking, a grizzled old woman who wore some of her smaller tools on leather cords around her neck. But the pilot had been doing this too long not to be wary.
"What's it to you?" "We're between jobs."
Greer nodded toward Joff, who turned out to be very good at looking innocent.
"We're looking for work in this area, and we need money fast. So we're not asking too many questions. If anyone asked us questions..."
Joff finished for her.
"We wouldn't answer."
"There's work to be had,"
the pilot said. Her milky blue eyes studied them, looking for signs of trouble, and apparently finding none.
"That is, if you've got a good ship and the nerve."
"Nerve? Listen, we've got...
Joff's indignation was easily silenced by Greer patting him on one shoulder. His performance was so convincing that not even she realized he was faking it until he settled down again easily. Greer leaned closer to the pilot.
Listen, we could really use a good run or two. If you've got any leads, we'd appreciate them. Risk is no object.
The pilot shrugged, perhaps deciding that if they weren't what they seemed, it was someone else's problem.
Lots of runs to and from Daxum 4 these days. They pay well for speed and silence. Quick money to be made there if you've got the nerve. Slide into orbit and signal the central hangars. Seems like the Amaxines have some sources there to tell them about passing cargo ships. Chances are, you'll get a call about a job before you've got time to take off your flight suits.
Daxum 4, Joff repeated with a grin. They'd hit the jackpot.
Thanks, ma'am. You have no idea how much you've helped.
Although the pilot seemed pleased to be thanked, she made a scoffing sound.
Thank me after you've dealt with the Amaxines. Not before.
Greer and Joff exchanged looks. The Amaxines. The pilot chuckled as she lifted her ale.
You'll see.
Greer had successfully shifted the conversation to other topics and had made sure to remain in place for a good while after the old pilot departed. This meant drinking more ale, and while she and Joff were careful to pace themselves, by the time they walked out of the cantina, dawn had begun to lighten the eastern horizon. But it was still only a faint, pale line near the line of the sea. Joff walked onto the bridge without hesitation. Liquid courage seemed to help him. Greer followed along, looking down without fear at the waves breaking white against the stony coastline. Although she didn't turn around, her ears were sharp enough to know that they weren't being followed. Another good thing about these rope bridges, they remained resolutely low-tech, meaning there would be no record of their visit here. They would be able to fly out clean, unnoticed, and with a promising lead.
I could have drunk that stuff, he insisted.
I'll bring you a bottle sometime and let you try. But trust me on this. We didn't want our whole mission riding on your first taste of port in a storm.
Fine, then. He sighed. Hey, can I ask you something?
Of course. But there's no guarantee I'll answer.
Greer said it lightly, assuming he just wanted some distraction from the pitch and roll of the rope bridge.
How come Senator Organa asked you about this in the hangar? You're her assistant. She could have brought it up at work.
Greer had understood this from the moment Princess Leia had first spoken.
The senatorial oath demands a promise that they will not use the Senate offices for purposes of espionage. Probably the oath means office more in terms of the senator's overall position, less in terms of the actual room where political business is done. But the oath doesn't specify that. So if Princess Leia is ever asked whether she violated her oath, she can truthfully promise no. On a technicality.
Joff turned to grin at her, open-mouthed.
We're involved in espionage!
Only if you don't keep saying it out loud.
He mouthed espionage again before adding,
Wait, why isn't it, you know, just like Bastatha?
The Senate authorized that. They didn't authorize this.
Unauthorized. I like how that sounds. Now this is more like it.
Joff started forward again, then made the mistake of looking down.
Oh, brother. Is the bridge... Did it get higher while we ate?
No, but the tide's going out, so you'd have farther to fall.
When Joff blanched, Greer laughed and took his arm.
Come on, walk faster. I've got you.
When a wave of dizziness washed over her, too, She ignored it and kept going. Probably just the port in a storm.
If being the populist candidate is half as irritating as being suspected of being the next populist candidate, Leia decided, this campaign is going to be unbearable. She doubted Tylin Gar or any of the other senators at Varish's home that night had spoken a word to a soul beyond their closest advisors. They didn't have to. Tylin had been correct when he said that Leia was the obvious candidate. Everyone had seen this coming except Leia herself.
Your Highness?
C-3PO came shuffling into her office.
Yet more visitors. We have leaders from the Association of Small Craft Manufacturers, eager to see you.
Leia looked up from her list of communiques, which was at least 3 times longer than usual. Did they give any particular reason?
Why, no, Your Highness. I would imagine it is normal lobbying activity. Well within regulations.
The droid was never happier than when citing rules.
Therefore, it is highly appropriate for them to visit, though I suppose the lack of an appointment is irregular. I could ask them to schedule...
Never mind, 3PO. Leia set her communiques aside for the moment. Show them in.
Right away, Your Highness.
3PO chirped as he shuffled back into her main office. At least the droid's enjoying this, she thought. Someone ought to. Leia made polite small talk with the small craft manufacturers, then with the ore traders of GAD, then with a group of junior senators from populist worlds on the Outer Rim. None of them could yet come out and say that they were hoping for her favor if she was elected first senator. They could, however, hint at the kinds of campaign promises they thought would make that election more likely. Unsurprisingly, all these promises benefited her visitors' pocketbooks. She forced herself to think of Tylin, whose intentions in nominating her she knew to be pure. If Leia was obliged to run for first senator, she intended to win. And if she won, she intended to do the job well. Setting the right precedent would be important. A few years of strong, disinterested, fair leadership might finally show the people how government ought to be run. But how many years? The term length and limits were still being debated by the committees, but a 7-year term seemed most likely. 7 years. Almost twice as long as the main campaigns in the war against the Empire. Those years had been the most terrifying, heartbreaking, meaningful, and exhilarating of Leia's life. Was she going to spend twice as much time trapped behind a desk? Once the final visitors for the day seemed to have left, Leia leaned her chair back so far she was practically reclining. When Corey came in and saw her, the girl smiled.
Want me to bring in a cushion so you can put your feet up?
If you do that, I'll fall asleep. And if I fall asleep, that means I'll go a whole day without leaving this place. No thanks.
It's been a big day, I guess.
The first of many to come. Are you sure you're ready?
If you are,
Corey replied, obviously meaning it as a sign of solidarity. But Leia, again, had to ask herself if she was ready for this, or if she even could be. Yet she knew in her heart that the war only seemed wonderfully thrilling in retrospect. So many of the exploits she now thought of as adventures had, at the time, been terrors. The Empire's discovery of the Hoth base, the ambush on the forest moon of Endor, the attack run on the first Death Star. Leia wouldn't give up her memory of any of them, but she wasn't sure she would have relived a single second. Well, maybe the time Han had run through the ice tunnels of Hoth to rescue her. She told herself that what she had been doing then would be very much the same as her role as first senator were she elected, because she would be doing her duty. If you only did your duty when it suited you, then you weren't actually putting duty first at all. Leia knew that, believed it, and accepted it. Didn't make her duty any more enjoyable.
Your Highness?
C-3PO peered through the door. Leia was about to tell him to ask any more visitors to come back tomorrow when he added,
Lady Carice Sindian to see you.
Right. The documents about the governorship on Beeren. Send her in. Leia straightened just in time for Lady Carice to sweep in wearing her latest ornate gown. Lady Carice, leaving already?
As you said, Princess Leia, the inauguration takes some time. So, better to begin early.
Lady Carice set out the hollows to be verified with Leia's thumbprint, her self-satisfaction so obvious it made Leia itch. Might as well have a bit of fun with this, she decided. It's probably as good a time as any to be away from the Senate. Leia spoke idly, almost absent-mindedly as she went through the verifications. Looks like the centrists won't have a candidate to field for quite some time. Lady Carice's deep golden skin did not blush easily, but the faintest reddening of her cheeks was enough to tell Leia she'd struck home.
I feel confident our senators will soon reach consensus.
I share your confidence. It's not as if 5 or 6 or even 10 centrists were fighting it out to be the candidate. Leia knew the number was at least that large, and likely to grow. The centrists were so power-hungry that none of their leaders could pass up the opportunity to wield the greatest power for themselves. After all, yours is the party that values control. What better proof of that can there be than self-control? This time, Lady Carice couldn't even reply, either from embarrassment or from exasperation. Surely even she saw the irony, though. The bickering populists had instantly and wordlessly agreed on a candidate, while the centrists couldn't find their own center. The more I think about it, the more I think a first senator might not be a terrible idea, Leia concluded as she verified the final document, pushed it across to Lady Carice, and smiled. Otherwise, our fellow senators could run around in useless circles forever, couldn't they?
Suddenly, it's time for a change.
That was as much as Lady Carice could manage.
Thank you, Your Highness.
My pleasure. Leia gave her a little wave as she went out the door.
Destination, ma'am?
Asked the pilot. This was a courtesy, not a necessity. He would have filed his charted course days ago. Lady Carice approved of the formalities.
Beeren, the capital city spaceport.
Aye, ma'am.
Lady Carice would normally have gone directly to her cabin, but today, she followed the pilot to the control room. If her presence surprised him, he was too well-mannered to reveal it. He flew a top-of-the-line vessel, befitting a royal journey, and as such, every area of the ship displayed streamlined elegance. Even in the control room, the piloting controls had been tapered down to thin, shining panels. The transparent bubble around them revealed a full hemisphere of the starry sky beyond. She could imagine stepping into air, into space itself, and floating free.
If I weren't royal and a senator, I might have enjoyed being a pilot.
But Lady Carice caught herself. What a silly thing to wish for. Anyone who could be royal would be. Anyone, that was, except for Princess Leia Organa. How could the princess value her position so little? Given that she'd been adopted into the nobility to begin with, should she not be more grateful? More honored? Not less? Certainly her behavior had turned common, mocking the perfectly ordinary political process of choosing a candidate. The centrists weren't behaving badly. They were behaving normally. So how had the populists managed to behave well? By having no other leaders worth the naming, of course. The populists had realized their benches were filled with the petty and the fractious, and promptly seized upon Leia Organa as their only viable option. The centrists, however, had a wealth of potential candidates. Soon, the strongest would assert himself, and the race could begin in earnest. Her transport eased deeper into space, freeing itself from the pull of Hosnian Prime's gravity. As the far moon passed out of view, the pilot said,
"Prepare for the leap to hyperspace on my mark. 3, 2, 1, and..."
The ship shuddered. The stars elongated. Lady Carice caught her breath as they slipped into hyperspace and left everything else behind. No matter how often she traveled through space, that thrill never left her. Cheered, she nodded toward the pilot and headed to her luxurious quarters, where her droid would already be preparing tea. Not even Princess Leia's attitude would ruin this glorious journey for her, nor her love of the political process. Let the populists have their day to laugh and point. Another day was coming, brighter and better. A day when the galaxy would again be rightly governed, and the strength of the centrist worlds would be revealed like a sword finally being pulled from its scabbard. And Lady Carice would be one of those who brought that day to dawn.